WBEZ is supported by RRF Foundation for Aging. Let's talk about ageism awareness. Did you know one of the many forms of ageism is internalized ageism? In fact, negative self-perceptions of aging decreases quality of life and can shorten our lifespan by more than 7 years. Let's recognize and call out ageism whenever and wherever it shows up. Check out rrf.org/news to learn more. That's rrf.org/news.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The federal tax credit for electric vehicles is expiring on September 30th.
A tax credit of up to $7,500 helped make pricey EVs manufactured in America more affordable.
With that said, we are still seeing adoption, and it's estimated that one out of four vehicles purchased in this next year, 2025, will be electrified.
Hey, Chicago. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Electric vehicle tax credits, they're expiring at the end of the month. And you can thank President Donald Trump for that. Or not. But in today's conversation, we got into what you need to know if you're considering getting an EV and what this means for our green energy future. So stick around for that and stay a little bit longer because you'll also hear an update on the local news stories that you need to know today. Before all that, In the Loop producer Linnea Dominic, she's joining me right now. Now, Linnea, you produced this episode. I want to learn more about the inspiration behind it. First of all, hello.
Hello.
Good to be sitting with you.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So why are we talking about this and why now?
Totally. Something we think a lot about in our newsroom and as we're pitching stories is, okay, there's a lot of stuff happening at the federal level. President Trump is making a lot of decisions, signing a lot of executive orders. Which ones do we need to talk about? Which ones are relevant for our audience here in the Chicago area? And this one seemed like one that was, yeah, we definitely need to talk about this because there are these tax credits that are going away, but here in Illinois, we still have rebates for the next couple of years if someone is actually interested in getting an electric vehicle.
And something like that can be confusing for an Illinoisan,
right? Absolutely confusing. You're like, how much money can I actually get? And it's really important for us to think about it now because Illinois actually has a goal of getting 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2030.
That's right.
We're behind. And so could this slow us even further? Is this going to make it so that our transition to energy and to vehicles that aren't emitting as much carbon and aren't emitting as much pollution that harm our respiratory systems, increase rates of asthma, like, is that going away?
Yeah. And, you know, I've thought over the years at different times, Linnea, about possibly switching to electric. The cost has been one of the big factors that has kind of kept me away. I'm like, they're expensive.
Very.
They're expensive. And I think about charging stations. Where am I going to charge this thing? I take a lot of road trips. So that's definitely an important point. But those federal tax credits were really something that at least kept it, you know, it felt attainable.
Yeah.
So to lose that,
Yes.
What happens now?
That's the question.
All right. Thank you, Linnea. Lots to chat about.
Yes. Thank you so much.
I sat down with Mark Cassidy, operations management for EV Energy Group, which helps companies and cities install and operate EV chargers. Mark is also looking into buying an EV. And Karen Weigert, who's In the Loop's sustainability contributor and director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. All right, let's get to the interview. Karen starts off by reminding us of the benefits of electric vehicles.
In the day-to-day, a benefit of going electric with the vehicle is if you're lucky enough to have charging at home, you don't have to drive somewhere to fuel up your vehicle. You just plug it in. So there's a day-to-day there. There's a day-to-day in maintenance. You don't have to think about the oil change. You don't have to have as much mechanical work done. So there's very much in the day-to-day, but the really big picture and part of the things that drive the policies are carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. So transportation is the largest source of carbon emissions coming out of our state overall and our nation. It's number two coming out of Chicago. And air quality generally. So there are a lot of things that come out of that tailpipe that can be really difficult for human health.
And so we're talking here, this conversation is timely because we're talking about federal tax credits and state rebates. We were excited under the Biden administration when a lot of these were put into place, but things are changing, right, Karen? Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. There were tremendous policy backdrops from the Biden administration, and the Trump administration is absolutely changing them. So even at the most macro level, the Biden administration had a goal of half of all new vehicle sales by 2030. They wanted to have be electric vehicles. That is not the goal of the current administration. And so some of the policy things, and there were a range of policies that the Biden administration put into place, including this economic incentive, this tax incentive for individuals to go buy their own EV. Mm-hmm. The Trump administration is ending those. So while they were put in place in the Biden team with an expectation that they would facilitate this huge transition into EVs, we're still seeing EV sales, but the sales that are being supported by this tax structure, they go away at the end of September.
Yeah, that's soon, right? We just got days.
Yeah, we've just got days, and they're substantial. The tax breaks, they apply to certain vehicles. You have to make sure that it is covered by this, and they also have income limits. So, you know, I think it's $300,000 is the top level for a new vehicle for married filed jointly. I think it's $150,000 for an individual. Mm-hmm. And those are for new, and they're slightly lower limits if you're looking at buying a used vehicle. So there are income limits on the purchaser. Mm-hmm. But all of that
but
was
But overall, it was fairly accessible to be able to get these credits.
Yeah, they were structured so that the majority of Americans, if they were thinking about a new vehicle purchase, would have an opportunity to have a little incentive to go and buy an electric. Mm-hmm. And that was wrapped in much larger policies around trying to ensure that the jobs and the manufacturing were also done in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And as we talk about all the technical technology benefits, rather, of driving an EV, the stakes for our health, Karen, and for the climate, they seem pretty high.
Yeah, they're absolutely interlinked. And so carbon emissions coming out of transportation are drivers of the emissions profile that we have now, certainly of climate. And it's something that is very controllable based on who's driving what. So the idea of switching from an internal combustion engine to an electric can actually drop significantly what that 1 mile of transportation would have caused. And that's just the carbon side. But it's the health side that's also so clear, which our vehicles are emitting volatile organic compounds. That's contributing to smog. They're emitting particulates, which can go deep in the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. And they're emitting sulfur dioxide, which is a driver, as an example, of youth asthma attacks. So we have a huge range of items that are coming out of those tailpipes that impact us and our day-to-day health when we're in that vehicle, when that vehicle goes by.
Yeah. And here's the thing, that the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, or CEJA, that goal I mentioned that was set of having 1 million EVs on the road by 2030 in Illinois, the reality is we're nowhere near that.
No, that's absolutely the state goal. And I think we're at about 145,000 EVs
so
on the road.
Without credits, are we going to make it?
I think it's looking tough. I absolutely think it's looking tough. Now, if we look at, you know, call it that 145,000, I think something like 37,000 were bought in the last year. So about a quarter of the current EVs that are on the roads in Illinois happened in the last year. So you were seeing growth. But if you project forward, we don't have that many years to get to 2030. So the math just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a reduction in financial support for EVs as opposed to an acceleration. So it's absolutely looking like that goal is in jeopardy. And just a little context, there are about 7 million passenger vehicles on the road in Illinois. So that goal was 1 million of 7. So that wasn't even the majority.
Oh, wow.
But we're definitely behind if we look at that goal.
So back to your consideration, Mark, of getting one of these electric vehicles. Tell me more about why you're thinking about it and why now in particular.
I've been lucky enough in the last 2 years where I have been in the cars, driven them. I've gone on road trips. I've rented EVs. Once you get behind the wheel and you realize these are really great cars, they're quiet, they're efficient, they're appointed really well, the technology is great, and you think to yourself, why would I ever want to go back? And they're only getting better. I've noticed because I've been researching in the last, 2 years, I've been looking at a mix of used and new. The used cars, you really don't want to go, I mean, you can, but I don't really want to go older than 2024 because the technology keeps jumping and they're jumping faster than a gas-powered car.
Yeah, but I understand family is sort of leaning or leading into why you're considering this as well. Did something happen with your wife's
car? You know, we just had an incident. And then last week, I probably had a check engine light and I had an oil change.
Oh, really?
And it's just like, I was going on a road trip, so I got to get the oil change before I go on the road trip. And then it was the check engine light, which is, why do I have that on? It was a gas cap. And that check engine light, which is emissions and the mufflers, and it's, I've got two cars, one with 104,000 miles, the other about 77. You start thinking, tick-tock, something's going to the other shoe is going to fall. It's not going to be a gas cap. It's going to be something bigger. I hate that.
Yeah, the old gas cap problem. Haven't we all been there?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we talked with Adelaide Zwick. She was able to buy a used Chevy Bolt for $15,000. And said that she would never thought that it was within reach, but the rebates are what made it feel like it was possible. So, Karen, I mean, the Illinois rebate, as we've talked about, I mean, it was awarded to low-income applicants first. But with current prices, I still wonder, are electric vehicles unrealistic?
One thing that's been really interesting about electric vehicles has been the growth in the numbers. And then the growth in what you can buy both new and used. So I think that unrealistic question, that's always going to be the question for every individual. What's their budget? What can they afford? And that's a different conversation now than it was a few years ago because there's actually a huge range, both new and used. So her example of a $15,000 used all electric, there are multiple that are at that price point now.
Yeah.
And as we have more on the road, and particularly as there have been some in fleets that are coming off, the used market's actually really going to grow. Mm-hmm. So is it in range? Everyone is going to have to look at their budget, but there are price points that range across the board. And I think the door's open for a lot of different folks as they're thinking about what the price point could truly be.
Mark, any thoughts?
I am dipping in the used market. I'm looking at the new cars. I think the new cars are real expensive. Even with the incentives, those one-off, two-off year EVs, they're very enticing. I'm looking at particularly a Honda Prologue, which is actually made by GM. I'm finding $25,000 to $30,000, and it's a fairly big mini midsize SUV. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good value. 15,000 miles, that's pretty approachable.
Yeah. No, I found the few times that I was looking, doing some car searching over the last few years, I would test drive EVs and are they smooth. Mm-hmm. They drive really well. Even when I go to the car show, it's like the first thing I want to do. But the price tag always gets me. The price tag always seems to get me. And then I just can't get my mind around the other piece. Not as many public charging stations around. So I always think of road trips. How would I survive? Is that improving?
Okay, so I've thought about that. I've done a couple of road, like I said, we've done a bunch of road trips. Are there extra shops? Yes. The previous Tesla that my coworker had was certainly limited. That was, I think, in 2016. His new Tesla, it's not an issue. We went to St. Louis. We stopped once. We stopped for 20 minutes in Springfield. We got something to eat. By the time we came back out, the car was ready to go. I found that totally acceptable. The other thing I asked myself is, how often are you going to be doing a road trip? I got one kid who's in grad school in Indiana. Okay, once, maybe in the fall, maybe in the spring. I'm not driving anywhere but around Chicago area, greater Chicago area.
Yeah. See, I do road trips, right? A lot of my family's on the East Coast or Canada. I go to Canada all the time. I just sent my daughter back to university in Canada, so I'm at least doing a six-hour road trip every so often to see her. So that's something that's on my mind. I feel like we're getting better, though. Yeah. Karen, what do you think?
It's absolutely a question. Like, where are you going to charge? And I certainly agree. It's different when you're home. You figure out what your home charging is, if it's at your home or if it's someplace nearby. But the road trip's always the question. And so there's been significant growth in charging infrastructure. And it's also really findable. So this idea of you hop online, you look, depending on which vehicle you have, it might just provide the information for you. And then you can build it into your experience. So mm-hmm. I've actually had multiple road trips with folks with EVs, and there's always a 30-second conversation of where are they going to charge? But it's just part of the conversation.
And then we get over it.
Exactly. And it's usually tied to a meal or another stop. And then they just go back to talking about how fun the cars are to drive.
And I wonder, though, if there are any efforts ahead to make sure that any brand can plug in at these charging stations and juice up the vehicles. Because sometimes they're brand specific, these charging stations.
Yeah, there has been a bit of the brand specific charger, and there's now a standardized version. And so you have both the growth of the standardized plugs and the infrastructure that has them in it. And then you've actually got converters for some of the proprietary branded ones. So there has been more of an alignment towards a standard interface. But then there's also then the plug layering that you can do if it's proprietary. So it's becoming much more open. There was a lot more variety a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's much more manageable now.
We talk about these EV credits. I know that a concern that has been raised, Mark, is that at the end of this federal rebate, at the end of this month, it's going to make it more difficult for folks to get a vehicle. But you don't quite see it that way.
I don't know. Maybe I'm playing the game. Everybody's buying a car now. And when's not a good time to buy a car? When everybody's buying a car. So maybe a month from now, that car in the lot, I'm hoping, might be a little lower. I'm going to see if I can pull it together by the end of the month. But I also know that, you know, I'm old enough to know that you never want to buy a car at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do want to buy the car at the end of the month. Usually you do. But this is where they kind of have you, which is, hey, that with those credits going away, they have a little bit more leverage. So, you know, I'm hoping that it opens my window up a little longer.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned dealerships there. I know your company, Mark, sells chargers to dealerships. So on top of the rebates for individuals to get electric vehicles, there are incentives through ComEd for businesses to buy electric trucks and buses and vans. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, we've worked with several dealerships we've helped with their paperwork, and we have part of our team is involved in helping them secure the funding and the grants from the state and from ComEd. It's difficult because there's a lot of paperwork and the funds can run out. But several of the dealerships we've worked with, they've said, if we don't do it, the guy down the street's going to do it. They look at it as a competitive advantage in the long run. These cars aren't going away and they're going to get better. It may not be as fast as the state would like to hit a million, but I do think for many of us, the cars make absolute sense.
Yeah. Tell me more about what you're hearing from dealerships about the moment that we're in right now.
They're as confused as we are.
Okay.
You know, everybody is unsure of what comes next. And if they can put a body in a car and sell it, I think most of those guys, they just want to sell cars.
Yeah. Illinois is also home to Rivian. It's manufacturing plant, and it makes passenger vehicles, also electric delivery vans for Amazon. I've seen those around. Do you expect, Mark, that these kinds of investments are going to continue even after tax credits expire?
Yeah, I mean, I think they will, because we were just talking about all the benefits for somebody like me, the check engine light, the no muffler, the lower maintenance costs. Imagine those trucks that are doing a lot of miles. Start and stop. You know, the regenerative braking, which helps put energy back into the battery. These trucks are stopping and starting all day. So I think it's a win for the fleet manager, who may not have to worry so much about fixing things as often as his gas-powered vehicles.
And I want to make sure this conversation isn't, you know, all doom and gloom. Karen, make sense of this. What's remaining here in Illinois that's going to help us reach this goal of getting more electric vehicles on the road?
Yeah, you know, one thing that matters for this whole conversation is the idea that there are so many electric vehicles out there that are part of the environment around us, and that people are increasingly buying them. So if you look at any global car manufacturer a few years ago, they didn't all offer EVs. Now they all offer EVs. So it's a fundamental switch. The car market is ultimately global, so we will continue to have more and more of that supply. You know, here in Illinois, there is charging infrastructure. There are still efforts at the state. There's still efforts and support through some of the the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act enabled things coming through ComEd for chargers and others. So there's more to come in infrastructure. Obviously, we're seeing some bumps with the direct incentives for individuals to purchase vehicles. Mm-hmm. But
we still got rebates here in Illinois.
We still have some opportunities here, particularly this week at this short window here with the federal. But it's a fundamental transformation. So it's really about, are there vehicles? Do they meet your needs? And can you charge them? And we see movement across the board on all of them. Is it as fast as it would have been with a different policy structure at the federal level? Probably not. But do we still see some of those trends continuing? Absolutely.
Yeah. So on the rebates, the Illinois General Assembly appropriated $14 million for the EV rebate program for fiscal year 2026. And there isn't an application cycle currently open. It closed in the spring, but the next likely one will open in October. And the rebates will be available through 2028 here in Illinois. So that is some good news, right? So let's recap here. Federal tax credits for individuals buying electric vehicles ending on September 30th, thanks to the big, beautiful bill from President Trump, or no thanks, I should say. But how will this affect the transition to electric, Karen, for the folks who might have just recently tuned in?
Big picture, I think it slows it down. Does it stop it? No. But does it slow it? Yes. An interesting example is if you just look at all-electric car sales. So electric vehicles hit almost 10% of car sales in August. It was about 9% in July. So it's peaking because of this incentive that is going to be there. And then it's expected that the incentive will go down and it will go away. So the projections that I'm seeing, you'll still see growth in EVs. It will be slower. It will be millions fewer EVs on the road, but there will still be millions coming out and being driven.
Yeah. I'd love to hear from both of you on this last one here. Consumers listening, what do they need to know about options in Illinois for getting rebates? What would you say, Karen?
If you're in Illinois right now, you're looking federal. So take advantage of this until the end of September. There's nothing in Illinois immediately, which Sasha, as you just mentioned, but there's something to come. So you've got a little bit of a sight line here. And then it'll get your thoughts ahead of yourself about what kind of vehicle, what's your price point, new or used. And if you've got a quick opportunity, this is it. And if you have a little more time, you can look to Illinois.
I want to know more about the Illinois program, because every time we go look for businesses, you know, it's always a little cloudy, a little murky. But for someone who's really looking for a car, I may want to take advantage of that.
Sounds like a plan. We'll leave it there. Mark Cassidy is an operations management for the EV Energy Group and also a potential EV buyer. And Karen Weigert is the director of Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility at Loyola University. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WBEZ is supported by RRF Foundation for Aging. Let's talk about ageism awareness. Did you know one of the many forms of ageism is internalized ageism? In fact, negative self-perceptions of aging decreases quality of life and can shorten our lifespan by more than 7 years. Let's recognize and call out ageism whenever and wherever it shows up. Check out rrf.org/news to learn more. That's rrf.org/news.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just a cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time to catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ news anchors Claire Lane and Mike Puente, Sun-Times reporter Cindy Hernandez, and Sun-Times photographer Zubair Khan on everything from the Chicago River swim to the protests outside of the Broadview Detention Center. Claire, never a bad idea for us to start with some positives, right?
Sure.
Yes,
yeah,
you're smiling.
On a Monday.
You're smiling, I'm smiling. The first open water swim in the Chicago River in 100 years just took place.
Yes, ma'am. And according to those who swam it, It was quite pleasant. Almost 300, I know. Believe it, 300 swimmers jumped into the river. This was yesterday. Organizers say the event reestablished Chicago as a swimmable city. The water was tested regularly, pretty thoroughly, leading up to race day to ensure that it was safe for swimmers. And a Chicagoan, this is Becca Mann, holds the first place title as she finished her 2 mile race in 40 minutes and 7 seconds. And she told WBEZ that the water was much clearer, much cleaner than she thought it would be.
Well, all right then, Becca.
We'll take it.
Good job. Okay, last Monday, Mike, you and I, we were on here and we were being so harsh to those Bears, but they crushed the Dallas Cowboys this weekend.
Absolutely. But in the loop, if you could turn back to the loop, I just said I wasn't worried about Caleb Williams. I wasn't worried about him.
Okay, I was the one that said that, Mike. Yeah, just throw me under the bus. No.
4 touchdowns yesterday. We all get free hot dogs now from the Wiener Circle. It's a great Monday. Come on, Victory Monday.
Yeah. So you're impressed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But now this team has to stay focused. I don't think they're good enough yet to just be like, we got this in the bag. They got the Vegas Raiders coming up. Mm-hmm. That's going to be tough. Every game is going to be tough for them. But what makes today even better, the Packers also lost. So that's even great.
Mike. Cindy, let's turn now to another story here. This is one that continues to develop, I would say. There were protests outside of the Broadview Immigrant Detention Center. They're now into the second week. Big picture, what's going on down there?
Well, people want the Trump administration's Operation Midway Blitz to stop. They want these ICE raids to completely stop. You know, they're all over the city. They're all over the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And they want the people being held at the ICE facility in Broadview to be released. They want them to be let go.
Yeah. Zubair, you were there. Early Friday morning, things had started to escalate. I know we reported that right here on the program. But, you know, from your view, just set the scene for us and tell us what you observed from the ICE agents and the other federal law enforcement and even the protesters who were there.
Yeah. So when I arrived at the scene, I noticed a big difference from the week prior because there had been Broadview police kind of standing in between the protesters and the ICE agents. The Broadway police were now at the end of the street.
Okay.
So tensions were very high as they were the previous week, but now there was no buffer. And so the ICE agents were on the roof aiming pepper guns and tear gas, or what I assumed to be tear gas, at the protesters. And protesters were coming up to the fence. Some of them were coming up to the fence, yelling through the fence at ICE agents. There was also groups that were singing, and so there was a variety of feelings, but tensions were very high, for sure.
It was a mix of emotions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sort of cascading all together at once. And Cindy, you and I understand you talked to some of the protesters who were on hand Friday. Do their stories sort of match up with what Zubair saw?
Yeah, they're all basically saying the same thing. You know, a lot of them were exposed to these pepper sprays and tear gas, and that didn't deter them at all. They continued to stay there well into the night, and you know, they kept, you know, making their demands to these agents, just stop, you know, leaving this facility, stop, you know, disrupting our community, stop disrupting the peace. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know, these ICE raids are causing fear, instilling fear in their residents, and ultimately disrupting the peace, and they just want it all to stop. So,
what do we know about what's going on inside the detention center?
Well, anything? Not much, to be honest. ICE and DHS haven't really released much information. We don't really know the amount of people that are being held inside. So we don't really know what's going on in there. Aside from what we're being told by family members who may have spoken to their loved ones who are inside. Some people are saying that there are at least 150 men being held in one room at one time. Mm. Men that are being held, you know, for days, you know, almost a week. So,
wow. Mike and Claire, you've both been delivering the news on these stories over the last several days, this morning included. What stands out to you? You first, Claire.
Yeah, I think what Cindy's talking about is how notable the difficulty is to get information from the federal government about mm-hmm. any of this. The Fed stopped publishing comprehensive data about any ICE arrests and detentions when President Trump took office back in January.
Yeah.
Right? And they've been on the ground here in Chicago since the 8th of September. And any info we're getting is because we're continuing to ask questions. We're trying to FOIA for information. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is.
We're showing up at these sites and just kind of seeing what we see for ourselves.
100%.
Mike?
That does stand out because if you get caught up in this, now you see on social media saying, well, if you're here legally, you have nothing to worry about. But we're hearing stories about American citizens getting swept up in this and like they're gone for like a month.
Yeah.
Where are they? Who's holding them? This has to be a violation of their constitutional rights right up there. You're not supposed to be held unless charges are pending, are against you after 48 hours. And if you're having to prove who you are, I mean, I'm just not seeing where is this going. But you got to think these are the images this administration wants to see. They want to see this heavy-handed tactic.
This where is the it war go? Zone they want to see.
They want to see the smoke. They want to see the tear gas. There was a person who's running for office who was thrown to the ground there. So where is this going to lead? It could end up getting worse before it gets better.
Zubair, sticking with this story, you know, what I'm thinking of is the fact that as journalists, we don't ever want to become the story, so to speak, right? We're here to just tell you what's going on. You decipher how you want to feel about it. On Friday, though, unfortunately, you were affected, I hear, by the chemical agent, which we think was likely tear gas, as you were trying to take photos on scene. So describe what happened in that moment and how you were impacted.
Yeah, I mean, and to be clear, it was not just me, but many of my colleagues and other journalists that were on the ground and the protesters who don't have the backing of a big organization to help them.
Yeah.
It was very intense. The situation escalated very quickly, and I had to focus on what photos I'm going to get, and that required me to kind of zone out a little bit. And when I focused again, there was tear gas all around me, and I was trying to get a picture of somebody affected by the tear gas, and I didn't realize that I was kind of in it as well.
What did it feel like?
My nose just kind of filled up with
it's no joke. I've been hit by tear gas in the past, and it's no joke. It could be just painful for your eyes. Yeah.
So how are you doing today? How are you feeling?
I'm much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot, though. And just thinking about what happened to you and the others who were on scene and everything that's happening in this very moment, I just want to take a moment while I'm here with you four and just like slow things down for just a bit, because I don't know about any of you, but I had a couple of moments over the weekend, at least, when all of the things I think were just weighing on me at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, let's be honest, this has been recurring for several years, but I feel like every few weeks it just gets worse and worse and worse. And so I'm thinking of all the things that we saw just over the weekend. You know, Mike talks about images. We saw Charlie Kirk's memorial service, and we're hearing all the rhetoric coming out of there, especially from our president, President Trump, hailing Kirk as this martyr, right? And then also saying, I hate my opposition. I hate my enemies. This is shortly after Kirk's wife talked about how hate is not the answer, which is quite interesting. I looked in the Sun Times. I see a letter to the editor who, you know, simply says America is falling apart. Another one from the executive director of an anti-violence group is reflecting on how it just feels like Black lives don't matter right now. So how are all of you processing this moment? Cindy?
It's difficult for sure. just seeing how our communities are struggling, and we're witnessing it, right?
Like, yeah.
At the same time as we're trying to get their stories, as the same time as, you know, we're seeking answers from government officials, it's a lot. It's a lot, for sure.
Especially when you're feeling it, too.
Exactly.
Well, you know, President Trump's words came on a Sunday. Now, anybody who's grown up in a Christian household, I grew up Catholic, that is 100% reverse of anything that you've ever been taught.
It's reverse of what my pastor said on Sunday.
Love your enemies.
Right.
Do good by your enemy. Even from Turning Point, Dr. David Jeremiah has said, hating your enemies is not the answer. And that's not what you're supposed to do. So here the president does this. He's fanning the flames We need a leader who's going to represent everybody. And it isn't just about him. It's about the entire country.
And he said it multiple times, too, just over and over. And
I don't know how
and
try
to make a joke out
it.
Of it. Like, I don't know, maybe Erica can help me later, but I hate my enemies right now. And I'm thinking,
and it doesn't take too much to be his enemy. Let's face it. If you go against him once, you're his enemy.
Well, as a media organization, we absolutely know what that's like. Zubair, any other thoughts come to mind for you just about all of the things?
Yeah, I mean, I think just, you know, we're living in a very difficult time, but I think these people showing up and media organizations showing up to cover these things, I think it just shows the importance of that because without us there, you know, we're in a privileged position to be there to cover these moments. And without us there, the situations can get much more difficult for the people who are just risking themselves for their own values.
Right. Claire, tell us what else you have your eye on this morning.
Well, since we're speaking sort of about faith, beloved nun, this is from Loyola University, Sister Jean has officially retired from her campus duties. This reporting comes from the Loyola Phoenix student newspaper. Have to shout out those kid journalists. Yes. The 106-year-old, she's experiencing some health issues. She's 106, so she just can't be on campus, you know, every day doing a lot of her duties. She celebrated that birthday, though, in August.
Yeah.
And many of us know Sister Jean served as a campus minister and chaplain for the Ramblers men's basketball team. So something we'll be watching throughout this week.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Sister Jean. As we wrap, Cindy, any story that we haven't mentioned here that you're watching?
Honestly, I'm just going to continue keeping my eye out on what's happening at Broadview.
Yeah.
We don't know when these ICE raids are going to slow down or completely stop. So I'm going to keep, you know, seeing what happens there and all around the city.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.